Welcome to Gaia's Consciousness Podcast, expanding your mind and spirit. Learn even more at Gaia.com. Watch interviews, movies, and original series created to empower the evolution of consciousness. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com. Your journey begins here.
It's been said in many spiritual traditions that the human being is born with an open connection to our soul, with remembrances from our deep past. Over time, however, we lose that direct connection through societal and parental programming and expectations. We slowly begin to conform, our dreams begin to close down, and we no longer remember where we go at night when the spirit leaves the body to refresh itself, gain knowledge, and connect with other souls. Jim Self has had the unique benefit of never shutting down. Every night, he goes to his soul's home place and meets with beings and ascended masters who have shown him how life in the cosmos works, including what this great shift means in very real terms. This is a fascinating story. Jim, thank you for driving all the way up to Sedona to meet us. I think everybody resonates really well in these beautiful red rocks.
Oh, yes. Sedona's a great place to be.
It is indeed. And you've had an interesting path because, on one hand, you're a very intelligent, grounded, practical person that started a life in politics at a very young age.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
Yes, it was.
City Council?
San Jose.
Mm-hmm. At 26.
Right.
How did anyone trust you to put you into office at that age?
Well, if you know about San Jose used to be the third richest agricultural valley in the world. And then they built houses over it. And when I started playing in the politics side of it, we had triple sessions in schools. And so people would buy this wonderful house and this nice orchard, and they'd sell the house, get into the house, and all of a sudden a new house would be next door and across the street. It was a ridiculous thing. So it was a very nice transition to be able to move from the old guard who ran everything to a whole new grouping of people coming in, and it was a nice fit.
Still, there was something that you were exuding that allowed this to happen. And let's back into that a little bit, because
sure.
Anyone watching you right now, you have an unusual amount of light coming out of your eyes. Granted, you have lights on you, but even when the lights weren't on you, you have a lot of light coming out of your eyes. So let's talk about dream time and who you really are.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens when people come into a body, born into a body, you know everything. That soft spot on the top of your head, that's the connection to the Creator. You're still connected. And then you begin to listen to mom, dad, preacher, minister, teacher, and you say, okay, I'm the little one, they're the big ones, and I'm going to do what they say. And you begin to shut that down. Also, people are very connected. They're clairvoyant, they're clairsentient, they're clairaudient. They have a very full connection to themselves and to the world around them. And then we shut that down to do what the big ones say to do. And in a way, I never shut that down. And it's an awkward place because people listening are very sensitive. You know, one of the things that happens to the people who don't shut that down is they begin to be hiders in life. They're very sensitive to the energy and to the feelings, the emotions of other people. And so that gets to be very challenging for a lot of people. For me, it didn't seem to affect me as much. And the path I'm on just allowed me to continue to walk through that. And then things like City Council in San Jose and building corporations and the many other things that I've been able to do, they were just learning points along the way to begin to understand this space that I get to play in now.
And that's really what life is.
Yes.
If we all understood it that way, it's all just an experiment, a playground, whatever you want to call it.
Very much.
So you've always known that. So you approached each of these things with the type of boldness the average individual might have lost because of all the other voices in their heads that suppress the boldness that we are innately.
Well, I would like to say yes, but I have had my own stuff, you know, in life. Everybody's got their stuff. And so to a great extent, see, you're always on your path. That path is something that's very predetermined by you. Usually when I say that, people jump up and go, what about free will? Well, it fits very well. That path that you walked, you've created it to have all of these experiences in your life. The free will piece is, how do you choose to experience your path? And when you start to recognize that you choose, there's no victims, you either turn away from your path or you stay on your path, you begin to look at what you want. There's always a boldness in it, but sometimes people get knocked down because mm-hmm. you're not okay, the world around you says. And we believe that to some plus or minus extent. And so in my reality, I believed it. You know, people said,
you
you're not okay.
Too?
Of course, everybody buys into
yeah.
it. But it's beginning to recognize that you can't be not okay. See, it's really an impossible thing to be not okay. You, this internal guidance system right here, is always okay. But what we do is we look at that external world, mom, dad, teacher, minister, and they say, this is what we know, and this is what the truth is, and this is how you do it. And then we follow that path, and we continue to look to our external world for our own validation and our truths. And that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so one of two things happens. Either you're very sensitive and you get pushed away and you say, I'm not okay and I don't fit and I'm not part of that. Or you shut it down in many ways and step into it and just boldly go, you know.
I think that's a good point you make because, I mean, even in my own life, I've been in media since I was a kid, basically, you know, my mid-early 20s. And I was so shy, I would have gnawed off an arm before I would have raised my hand in class. And I was terrified to do mm-hmm. this. I did it on a dare. And yet, if you can push through, like you say, it's not that the fear might not show itself, but if you can go there anyway, that's part of that journey of boldness,
yeah.
isn't it?
Very much so. And there's a particular piece where people lose quite often. There's an aspect, this inner guidance system, that you simply know this is my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when it's not your truth. And sometimes when you start to play the game of the external world, do money, do fame, do whatever it may be for you, we have a tendency to shut that internal guidance system down. It's like, yeah. kind of be quiet. I don't want to hear this. I'm on my path. I'm having success or whatever.
Yeah.
And we don't listen to our own truths. What this shift of consciousness is about is this internal guidance system is now becoming the compass that's driving you.
Absolutely. Now, I want to backtrack a little bit because we didn't go into it. You've had this extraordinary ability that is very rare. When you go into Dreamtime, into the other dimensions at night, you actually have recall when you come back. Can you tell us what you're doing over there and also how that information may have interfaced with putting you on your path and also making some of the other earthly decisions you've made up to what you're doing now?
I can't do that. See, one of the things that happens every night, you go home.
Yeah.
Everybody goes home
yeah.
every night. You lay the body down and you say, I'm going to sleep. You begin to disconnect the emotional, mental, spiritual body from the physical body, and you go home. And as the process of going home, you pass through a dream space, the astral plane, as people describe it. That's not home. That's just a place that you get to also play. But when you go home, it's like a fine flute or a single candle burning. It's so quiet and calm, and it's in that focused attention point that you remember yourself. You remember everything. And in that space, it's an amazing place. The great beings that people would attach to or have reference to, the Jesus, the Buddha, the Metatrons, the Archangel Michael, they're all there. They all sit at that table. And the other ones that are there are the yous, you know, the you and me's. We sit at that table too, fully engaged in that process. The challenge is when you come back to the body, and when you separated, there's the acupuncture points. See, this is very interesting because that's the docking points between the emotional and the mental body. And they're little magnetic vortexes, and they start to shut down, and you begin to go home. But when you come back and you reconnect into that body, this is the point where most people remember their dreams, is when you're coming back into the
mm-hmm.
body. But you pass through that astral aspect, and that's not your dream. That's not where home is.
No.
That's just another place.
Yes.
But as soon as you re-enter that body space, where you left off yesterday, you pick right back up. So it's like going from that single flute of quietness, that single tone, back to the Star-Spangled Banner. All the noise of yesterday clicks right back in, and people forget. In my reality, part of my path is to remember that space. So I can come back and say, look, this is how this works. These are how dimensions work. This is how this pathway of the shift works. So the question, though, what do you do when you go there, is a very difficult one to answer because the reference points are different. And in you, when you start playing in this fifth, sixth, seventh dimensional reality, it's a completely different realm of consciousness. So the bridging doesn't happen comfortably in language. And part of my wonderful journey is I have enough awareness of what happens there in that I can bring into language and then speak to this shift of consciousness.
And so articulately as well. And continuing on that dream theme for a moment, this is very much as I understand it, although I can rarely remember anything from that quiet time. And I've often felt that when you're passing back through that little astral thing, which is, it's recognizable, it's a very close dimension to Earth, people that you know, I mean, you might be hooking up with individual energies or even individuals in astral form, and maybe even bringing back through some understanding of something that you're balancing within the being via the feelings that are played out in that little drama realm, more human realm.
The astral plane is a very interesting aspect. It is part of the fourth dimension. Mm-hmm. It is a place where things happen in a different time configuration. You know, you've had dreams where somebody from your past and somebody from your future, they're in the same dream, and
right.
It's very consistent. You don't think much about that. So, but the astral plane is a very fascinating place, and it's going to be a troubling place for many as we go on this mm-hmm. shift, because one of the things that happens in the astral plane is what you think is what you get as you think it. But also the astral plane is fascinating because depending on the life you live here, if you are a person that has lots of negative thoughts and lots of drama, when you go through into that astral plane, something very specific happens. You see, thoughts are electrical and emotions are magnetic. Very important piece of information. And so how you think and then how you bind your thoughts to emotions, I hate that over there, and you feel that anger or that resentment or whatever it means, or I love this wonderful thing and it's airy and it's fluid. If you ever notice thoughts that you think that are heavy, angry, resentful, troubling, worrying, they linger a very long time in your awareness, in many people's
awareness. That's hell.
That you are very accurate. That's hell. But it's hell in a moment where I'll point to. What happens is when you hold those thoughts here and then you pass into your sleep space, those magnetic thoughts of resentment, let's say, that thought is such that it anchors to all the thoughts ever thought that have that same thought and emotional configuration. So you just magnetically get pulled to a scripting that is very much like what you think. So, but where it becomes hell is very accurate statement. And what you do is, in fact, they've done a study on people who are in prisons. And one of the common things they say is, the thing I'm most unhappy about in my life is when I go to sleep. I don't want to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah, that's sad.
Reason it being is when I hold anger, resentment, murder, rape, incest, and then I go to sleep, guess what I experience? So what is that astral plane that's challenging is the heaviest, ugliest thoughts thought that have never been manifested by you.
Mm-hmm.
They sit in that level of the astral plane, the heavier part of the astral plane. And when you go to sleep, you begin to magnetically connect into all the other thoughts that others have thought. And that's a place that you don't
want to be. And that's not just your thought frequency, it's everyone who's had similar frequency of thought.
Every thought.
Feeding that field.
Every thought ever thought like that. When it's manifested, you bring it into the third dimension and experience it. But where it has not been manifested, you begin to access that when you go to sleep. The challenge for the shift, we're a little bit out of context here, but the third dimension, which you can talk about, is going to dissolve. It's going away. It cannot continue to exist. But the fourth dimension isn't going to go away. So when you begin to play in that fourth dimensional space and you hold those really negative, ugly thoughts, you're going to begin to experience what you think as you think. And that's going to be a challenge for some. See, the flip side of it, though, is when you think about puppy dogs and little children and wonderful things and butterflies and beautiful Sedonas of the world, those are fleeting thoughts in a way, because there's that magnetism is not dense, it's very fluid. And so you have a nice feeling with those thoughts, but you don't stay focused on them a long time. So when you begin to have that kind of construct and you go home at night, you pass into that area much more quickly than you do into those places which you don't identify with, those heavier thoughts.
Okay, now you've opened up three or four different places we're going to go anyway, so I'm going to let you guide this. Can you talk, you've just talked about essentially the beginning point of what this shift is, right?
Correct.
Now, another understanding I have, and we're going back just a little bit to that dream state interfacing with this fourth dimensional aspect we pass through coming back from our home at night, is that as the third dimensional frequencies start dissolving, there might be some confusion with individuals as to their time in the dream state versus their physical reality. And
yes,
some people may already be experiencing this, good or, you know, whether it's positive or whether it's heavy.
Well, let's back into that with some structure.
Yeah.
So this thing called dimensions is a very interesting aspect. So a dimension, let's start with this third dimension, which I'm saying is dissolving, it's going away. Mm-hmm. Well, the dimension is not the chair we're sitting in, the house that surrounds us, the tree outside the window. That's form. That's physical form. But what this third dimension is a very dense reality, and it's very structured. It's conditional. There's nothing in the third dimension that's unconditional. You have to get into the fourth and fifth before you experience unconditional. So conditional, it's very rigid. There's not a lot of flexibility in this third dimension. It deals in things like always and never. She's never going to be trustworthy. I can never, he always is going to be this or that. See, there's no flexibility in that, very rigid. There's also a component in the third dimension that keeps us very much in the third dimension, and that's how we understand time. Time is a very fascinating thing. Time is an application. It's not a fixed creation. So in the third dimension, the time that we play in is called past, present, future, and then you die. But if you look around and you listen to people speaking, what you hear them talking about is not present time, but this happened to me once upon a time, and I hope it never happens to me again. Or they said if I would, therefore I will be. So when you listen to people, very seldom do you hear them speaking in present time in a third dimensional reality. There is a slight moment of present time, but it's called reactionary present time. It's like, oh no, this wasn't supposed to happen. Are you in present time? Oh yeah. Are you a happy camper? No. I'm in reaction. Right? So let me, if that's more or less the box. But what happens is there is no past and there is no future, but there is a past present moment that you experienced, and there will be a future present moment that you will experience. But when people play in the past, a lot of times you say, how are you? And people go, oh, I'm fine. Well, somehow I'm fine and I'm fine don't match up. When you say, well, what's going on? Well, my husband died 20 years ago. Oh, and it's still sad for me. Well, they're sad in the present moment. So emotions can only occur in the present moment. But when you, and an event in your past is a piece of information. So when you keep reliving your past moment over and over, you get the same thing over and over. And so that's time related. But if I said to, oh, I know your husband died, that's too bad. But how was that lunch you had yesterday at that restaurant? Oh, it was really great. Are they in that past moment at that moment? No, they're now very present. And that present time moment is kind of a fourth dimensional space. You live in both of these at the same time. And so in the present, in the fourth dimension, present time is a very big piece. But what makes present time so important as a time application is when you're living in the past or living in the future, you don't have choice. You have reaction. The moment you get into present time, then you have choice. And it's in that choice you begin to create different structures. Fourth dimension has a consideration called paradox. And in simple terms, paradox means what was true just a minute ago may not be true right now. Mm-hmm. So in the fourth dimension, you get to get out of many of those restricted, non-flexible structures. So she shows up at your door 20 years later, and you say, oh, I remember you, you were the bad one. But what they may have done is showed up at your doorstep to say, I'm so sorry for what I did 20 years ago. So if you can have flexibility, you begin to change your reality. That simple piece is what's going to allow everybody to step into this next dimensional structure.
And as you say, this is a choice. Mm-hmm. We have to make this choice in the moment, right?
It's in the moment. You only have the moment. You have history from your past, mm-hmm. and you have creative opportunity in your future. But you can only make the future happen in the moment.
And I bring that up because a lot of people think that we're here, we chose to incarnate into this time, it's going to happen to us. But actually, there is a participation that needs to occur. There are choices that need to occur. And you just spoke to that. And there, one of the things that's very disconcerting for a lot of people right now, as we, again, I want to keep this journey going through these dimensional fields intact as we move through them in this conversation. But one of them that is disconcerting in the moment is that people reach for words, all ages, not Alzheimer's.
Right.
And you talk about this in your book. And when I read your book, I thought, oh my God, you pick up something so ordinary. You have it in your head, picture in your head, you're going to go do this. You can't even articulate the word for that common thing. Can you tell us what's happening?
Yeah. See, this shift, the universe understands you don't remember who you are. So let me identify it this way. So you're walking along and you're having a good day and somebody comes along and insults you. And you first have a thought, well, that doesn't sound very good, but you immediately have an emotion. And in that emotion, you say, oh, this isn't a very good thing. And then you try to figure out what to do with that. You're not attractive, you don't fit, you're not intelligent, you're never going to amount to anything. You get insulted. And you've got this insult, and what do I do with it? You go to your best friend and you say, somebody just said I'm not smart, and they go, they were right. Now what do you do with it? Because you have no place to dump it off. So what we do is we simply say, I can't handle this anymore, so I'm going to put it over here in this little box called denial. And then you keep looking at it and it keeps coming back into your... So you make a deal with it. You say, if I put you back here in this place called unconsciousness, I'll make a deal with you. I'll never go visit that spot again if you don't jump out and bite me in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is we have collected a whole lot of who we are not. See, going back to what I said in the beginning, you can't be not okay. But you can accept other people's gifts of you're not okay. And what we have a tendency to do is we wear those coats and we simply walk around defining ourselves by I'm not okay. But you can't be not okay. So as this shift unfolds, why you're losing your memory is the universe knows that you don't remember where you stored all those I'm not okays. And in this journey, you can't take your baggage with you. From this third dimension, moving to this fifth dimensional space, you can't be not okay in the fifth dimension. So you and the universe are clearing away a lot of those patterns that you hold on to that simply say, I'm not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so this transformation we're in, you are losing your memory. And the memory is really, I'm not okay. And it's disappearing. But sometimes the part you're asking about, and I've had this of holding a spoon, and it's like, there's a... Can't find it, no matter what. It doesn't matter whether you're a child or an 85-year-old person. It's, as you say, it's not Alzheimer's. You are losing your memories of I'm not okay. you think about your past, you've had lots of experiences where you've been insulted or you've embarrassed yourself. Those were experiences. But if you really think about it, many times those experiences happened and they took 1 second or 2 seconds, and yet you define the rest of your life by, I'm not okay. That's being cleared from your reality. And so that's where part of this memory
loss is. If it drags spoon with it, there you go.
And what happens is because the brain and the synaptics and the axons and all of the aspects of the brain and that whole field of memory, which sits in your energy field far more than it sits in your head, as pieces are removed, those connections get disconnected, spoon. Mm-hmm. And you think about it for a minute, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, spoon. So all that reconnection is going on all the time. But you are losing the memory of who you are not.
You're not losing your mind, you're losing your memory.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
That's a good distinction.
Gaia.com lets you explore over 8,000 films, documentaries, and original series.
There's so much going on in the unseen world.
Hidden truth.
Why in the media today? They still seem to hold back on these incredible stories.
Behind an unknown universe.
Where science and spirituality all come together.
Gaia.com, content you can't find anywhere else. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com.
You're talking, and I've heard this is other people speak of this as well, moving from this third dimensional consciousness into the fourth, into the fifth dimensional consciousness. Now, I think where some people who've contemplated this become confused is the understanding, this fine understanding of the difference between dimensions and vibrational frequencies and densities. It doesn't mean your world suddenly disappears, but your consciousness has shifted.
Correct,
can
exactly.
Can you explain, well, and if you'd explain that a bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the couch, the chair, really doesn't go away in this fifth dimensional reality. You live in a third and a fourth dimension all the time.
Yeah.
And you're stepping into a fifth dimension. The fifth dimension is lighter, it's airier, if you would. In the fifth dimension, words like safety and trust do not exist. There's nothing unsafe, and there's nothing to distrust. In that fifth dimension, it's co-creation, cooperation, it's beauty and well-being and reverence and kindness and graciousness, and all those wonderful words. But those words are not intellectual spoken words, they are felt. And so in that place where you live graciousness, you live certainty, command, you live capableness, when you begin to live in those words, you start to move around very differently. In a third dimension, you know all those words, capable, certain, happy, gracious, commanding, but how often do we live those words? And see, now we're talking about the path into the fifth dimension. Because when you can sit and feel happy, or if I say, have you ever been certain? And, oh yeah, I've been certain, you say. But if I say, no, wait a minute, just take a breath and feel certain, all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, certain. Something happens in the physiology when you change the frequency of thought. Then you begin to get to a place where you start to structure that thought into an every moment action. And you find also when you're feeling capable or certain, pleased, there's a presence about you. And that presence is in present time. That's the place where you command from well-being. And that's the pathway into this fifth dimensional space.
And shall we assume that when we evolve ourselves into this fifth dimensional consciousness, that the speed of creation changes?
Oh, yes. It becomes instantaneous.
Yeah.
See, when you change the time configuration and you get away from past and future and you get into the present time, where the game of time in present time, there's four layers of present time, and each one becomes more instantaneous. And so as you step into this, you're going to find also that time is simultaneous and time is also circular. And so there's places in these present time configurations where when you are very present in your body, observing your reality, and then choosing how you wish to interact with that reality. That concept is very different than shoot, ready, aim, or, oh, they said, and so I'm going to do what they said. So when you start to get into that construct where you can observe, choose, and act, and you begin to play in well-being, recognizing this is all about well-being. I don't need to be angry. You can't take anger with you into that fifth dimension. It's too heavy. It's like a big weight in your hot air balloon. The balloon will just go up so high and it'll stall out. You have to get rid of the I'm not okays. See, this is what the universe is doing. It knows those heavy rocks in your backpack have nothing to do with you. They're just gifts that others have given you that you've accepted to walk around with. As they begin to dissipate and go away, the ability to simply have conversation without, am I okay, begins to be very fluid. And it's in that space that you're going to start to find the ability to create more instantaneously. Like, I'd like an apple, and that apple's going to appear in your hand.
Yes, that's very beautiful. Let's look at the human beings that exist now. Certainly this journey is perhaps proving to be a little more challenging for people who were born a few decades or several decades ago as the beginning of these energies started making this shift. So we're essentially born into the previous densities and constructs and boxes, yet we chose to be the first ones in that generation that have chosen to go through this metamorphosis.
Yes.
From that density through to another one, which is, that's a brave group of souls. And then you have the next ones coming in who, it's a little, the energies were a little more established, the new energies. Then
yes.
You have the little babies being born now. And can you talk a little bit about what this has been like from your observations of these different generations that have chosen to come in at very specific times?
Yeah. These beings at each one of those intervals, really, it started back in the late 1800s. It was an inkling of thought of possibility. And some came, and some performed, and some did what they did.
This were the Rudolf Steiners and some of these individuals.
Nikola
Tesla.
All of these,
yes,
great people.
Yes.
And yet they came into a time where they came into a confrontation with an ideology, a philosophy, money was a big piece. Not making it bad or good. It was a philosophy. And how we will create and we will build great empires, some said. The Rockefellers and all of those did remarkably wonderful things, but they did it from a place that was not in that law of one, where the first become the last and the last become the first. They did it with a break in it. Me, I'm going to get it for me, and I don't care about them. And that's what we played through that period of time, setting this all up.
A lot of resistance to the ones who came in with knowledge.
Sure, they didn't.
Yeah.
So when a Tesla showed up and an Edison showed up and the guys with the money said, where do I make money? They weren't going to make money from Tesla. And if Tesla had his, if that had been adapted, we would have been having this conversation back in the 40s.
Yes.
But it wasn't adapted and it wasn't integrated. And so that break where there was okay to have poor and non-havingness and it was okay to not pay attention to women's rights and gay rights and environmental rights. And so we brought ourselves to this place. But as that was happening, there was the you and me's and many others that said, we're going to make a difference. And so you had an interval in 1920 where there were some really remarkable beings that came onto the planet and said, I'll make a difference. And they did. Quietly they came and they went. But starting in about 1945, a very large grouping of beings came. And many of them came for different reasons. Many of them came with very big purposes. And yet it was still an inkling that maybe, just maybe, something would happen. See, because we have done this numbers of times before, and in those past times we've not succeeded. And so the intention was to become this fully Christed consciousness. That's not about a man or a religion. That's about an evolution. And we have not succeeded. And we've ripped up that blueprint and we've tried again. And so this whole process was another one of those. And that year 2000 was very magical. And you can read about it in Revelations, Ezekiel, Daniel, in the Bible. And you had nine ways to do yourself in to rip up the blueprint to try once again. But in 1945, 46, that grouping came into presence. And they came very much into presence in the late 60s. And you had the environmental movements and the gay movements and the, all the various movements, women's rights, where people just said, enough. And then, oddly enough, that disappeared in the 70s and the 80s. And then money came back into the process. But make no mistake, those that brought about the 60s and 70s, they didn't go away. And now they're coming back in lots of different ways. And they are making a difference. These are big beings. And in 1987, when the harmonic convergence came, that was enormous, because that's the point in time where the new ones started to come. And so you're watching these kids today. Their DNA is different. Their mental configurations are different. Their recognitions of where they came from is conscious to them. We just don't ask them many times. So their knowledge of who they are is very ingrained in them. And now the newer kids, the ones with autism and the ones that are broken and obviously something's wrong. No, nothing's wrong. We just don't recognize the capacity that they have. And if we were to recognize it, we would have to change. But now we're into the shift. And the shift is, in fact, going to occur in such a way that this grouping of great ones that were quiet but basically made a difference has come about. And this, and you're seeing it now, and more are waking up. And those are the leaders and the teachers and the healers and the ones that said, I can make a difference. And they never lost that right here in that space in their heart.
So this is a challenging time then for the little ones who have come in. They have one foot still in their home field and their other foot here. It's almost, in some cases, as you say, in autism, it's almost like it's a premature stepping into this world because the world doesn't understand them and is not ready to embrace everything that they have to offer just yet. How do you see us bridging that with these incredible young beings who are here now?
These incredible young ones will take over, you know, and it's, they know what they're doing. And see, it's an interesting thing about these new ones, because some of these have never had bodies before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these are big beings coming from lots of places. And there are many who have had bodies before. And they have the knowledge to step right into things like governments and corporations and basically say, we're going to do this from that law of one, where everybody counts. And there's no greed. And basically there's a philosophy that you're going to see, you've started to see it. It's 1 + 1 = 3. How do you take everything to the high road? And when you play in that philosophy, and it's like our business, we give away far more than we charge for. And we give away substance, because I know I'm never going to see all those people that I'm talking to in all these free lectures. But it doesn't matter if I get rewarded from, well, give me your dollar. So that model is starting to fall apart in the world. The money model is going to change to something really remarkable. But it's based on 1 + 1 = 3. Take it to the high road, give things away, and it comes back to you in many ways. That's the what you're starting to see in this shift. But you're seeing people in each one of those generations that you're talking about, the ones that came in the 40s particularly, are making very major things happen today, even though they're not visible in many regards.
Thank you for explaining that. It's a very, very beautiful kind of gradation of the consciousness coming in. Yeah. And now when you're working with people, I mean, we've already talked about what the possibility for each of us is now if we make that choice to start moving into the clearer feelings, emotions, listening to our internal self, moving into that fifth dimensional consciousness. But in your work, there are tools that you utilize to do this. And I know you can't share everything here because we only have a short bit of time together. Maybe just give us a glimpse of some of those tools and people can check in with you later
sure.
to find out
sure.
more.
See, what you're really asking about in your evolution is something that you're not taught in the system mm-hmm. of your education and your upbringing. See, you're taught that everything external to you is what drives your reality. And so we're starting to begin to recognize, no, that I count. And that's a big shift for a lot of people. Begin, not I is the one that am really important from the ego side. It's the place that I have value is what's starting to happen. But in order to begin to play there, one of the things that helps is to recognize that energy and the vibration of energy and the vibration of words and thoughts and emotions. If you understand what's happening in and around you and how to manage your energy, you basically can step out of all of these issues that you generally are confronting in your external world where they tell you you're okay or not. And so this energy field, this aura around you, very, very important thing. In a way, this is not a truth that I'm going to say, but there's a point where you stop and you start. Really, that's not accurate, but for this purpose. If you can define where the edge of your aura is, which is approximately when you stick your hand out in front of you and turn it this way, and if you can begin to have a consideration that from this point to me is who I am, and everything on the other side of that is Shakespeare's theater to entertain me, would that create a concept and a perception differently than you normally walk around with? Yes, it does. If you can stay on your side. So one of the tools, very simple, we use the concept of a rose. It has lots of meaning. But if you were to create an image of a rose right here on the edge of your energy field, and know it goes all the way around you, so you're standing inside of a circle, if you would, and this is me, and that's the theater. And the rule is you stay on your side of the rose, more or less. If you can play that game, it puts you, one, into present time, and two, it gives you choice. Then you can observe, choose, and decide on how you wish to act. Very gigantic shift in people's reality. One of the things that happens to people is, I'll even go this far, most of the thoughts that you think and most of the beliefs that you hold are not even yours. And so how much time do you pay attention to all that noise running through your head all day long? And mostly it's other people's thoughts moving through your space. As soon as you create this rose, and this is not a wall or a keep out or a defense mechanism, it just simply says, this is me, and that's the game
that
we're...
Yeah.
And just by entertaining that and holding it, an enormous amount of the noise begins to stay out. Also, many people are very empathetic. I feel you. Well, what happens is I feel you. In order to say that, I have to be in present time going, oh, yes, this is sad about your 20-year-old husband that died. I feel your feelings, empathy, sympathy. But in real terms, it doesn't do you very much good running somebody else's emotions through your body. But when you look at families, for example, families are very much in each other's space. And it causes challenges in relationships often, if you think about it from that standpoint, not beating up families in any way. But I cannot distinguish myself between your feelings and my feelings. Mm-hmm. Husband, wives, mothers, children. It doesn't matter. It's I like you because you're like me. But when I run you through the me, I get confused quite often. As soon as you play with this rose, you start to create a distinction between your bubble that you live in and the bubble that I live in. And I can admire and respect you a whole lot more many times when I'm not trying to figure you out from right here.
And feel everything and process everything the other person is feeling, and yet we do this simply to feel like we're connected to each other.
Very much. Yeah. And it's a distortion, and once you begin to create this, I don't want to use the word separation, but identity of me and identity of you, I can admire you far greater mm-hmm. in your creations rather than being in competition with you because why did you get it and I didn't?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole mindset begins to shift. And you literally start to move into that place where I can allow you, admire you, appreciate you being you, and learn opportunities because I'm not in competition with you.
Yes, very beautifully
very
stated.
Very big deal.
Big deal. I can feel what you're articulating energetically, yeah. as other people can listening to this, watching this right now. That was very beautifully put.
I'll give you another simple mm-hmm. one. See, and people understand this concept of grounding. Mm-hmm. Okay, grounding. That's word's been floating around for some time. And people have energetically begun to understand that if you imagine a line from the tip of your spine to the center of the earth, it's just like putting your hand under the water to get rid of that electrical charge.
Yes.
But I said earlier, thoughts are electrical, emotions are magnetic. So that electrical line will start to siphon off many of those thoughts. You know how you get people's thoughts and they're
the
bouncing
busyness.
Around and
yeah.
you just are consumed all day long. That simply is like a ping pong ball that mm-hmm. has no place to go. But when you ground and you give the command to turn on the grounding, that electrical static has a place to go. But simultaneously, the emotions you feel many times are not your emotions. And so if you build a little coil around that line that you connect, you begin to neutralize many of the emotions that have nothing to do with you at all.
Yes.
Now think about it. If you could get rid of that anger or that sadness or that depression, what you will find when you define the rose and you ground, that a great portion of that has nothing to do with you at all.
Again, very beautifully put.
Thank you.
And now we go to this kind of final little point, a huge point, is that when you're with you, when you're truly connected with your deepest aspect of your multidimensional self, there is this quietude. There is not a need for chatter, for competition, even to seek or question. It's so quiet and clear. And the contrast is almost non-existent.
Correct.
We, up until now, feel alive through contrast. So psychologically, we have to let go of this desire for this contrast to feel alive, to go into this much more sublime place. And how do you experience it as your students, as you yourself, and the people that come into your lectures and such? How does that progression look?
Well, one of the things that I find in kind of this path that I've been asked to teach by the archangels, and what the archangels said is, we believe there's a pathway that has never been walked, never walked. And if it's followed, it will ascend, it'll create an ascension for those that walk it, a change, a dramatic change. But it will also create a light, a magnetic portal, if you would, that will draw all of the third dimension into the fifth dimension. And so that's kind of what Mastering Alchemy has been. But that pathway is very specifically laid out, and words become very important in the pathway. So if I say to you in third dimension the word ease, like, oh, take it easy, you have a sense of that. But when you get into the quietness that you're pointing to and you say, I'd like to experience ease, very different experience energetically in the body. When you step into a fifth dimensional space and you recognize that you're a citizen of the fifth dimension, and in that space you live in a reverence and a regalness, it's almost like a royalty with the most wonderful side of it, where this is who I am, that presence becomes very big. Then you begin to experience words like freedom in a way you cannot imagine in a third and fourth dimension. But you experience that word ease. It's full, it's distinct, it adds magnetics. It attracts words like graciousness. Graciousness is a fifth dimensional world. We can speak it in our language, but you have no idea what graciousness is as you begin to be that citizen in the fifth dimension, living in ease and beauty and well-being.
We've painted a beautiful portrait of what we can choose to move into, and it is our choice.
And where we are about to go.
And where we're about to go. And again, Mastering Alchemy is the work that you're offering the world at this time. People can check in with you or go to seminars, read books, whatnot. There's plenty online, free also.
Yes.
And DVDs, all of the above, so they can start working themselves through clearing, not just clearing, but actually choosing to go on this path into themselves, into their fifth dimensional self.
See,
Very beautiful.
It's a pathway.
It's not a
truth.
Yeah.
It's not a philosophy. It's not anything. It simply says, if you can begin to change this I'm not okay into a sense of I'm capable, I'm certain, I'm present, you have a very different experience. It's not follow me or listen to, it's do this. Mm-hmm. Apply these tools and watch the world around you change.
I think you're a good person to do this. You have a great deal of humility and clarity in your being, and I really appreciate your taking the time to sit with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gaia's Consciousness Podcast. Learn even more at Gaia.com and watch interviews, movies, and original series, all to empower the evolution of consciousness. For more information, visit GaiaPodcast.com. Gaia, watch, belong, transform.